Hello, hello, and welcome back to Arthouse Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make arthouse, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Swetman, and today we have a discussion of the new film, Fair Play, from writer-director Chloe Domont, and starring Phoebe Denever and Alden Ehrenreich. Joining me today is film critic Saxon Whitehead. Stick around.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Arthouse Garage. We're going to talk about Fair Play in just a moment, but first, we've got another Arkansas filmmaker spotlight. I've really enjoyed lately having local filmmakers join the show to tell us about themselves and their work, and today, an Arkansas filmmaker named Pauline Angelina is here to tell us about her upcoming film. Pauline is currently working in Conway, Arkansas, and she's working on a film called Mountain Strong. Now here is Pauline to tell us all about it. Welcome to the podcast, Pauline Angelina. How are you today?
Good. Thank you. I feel so great to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you on the show. I'm so glad you reached out. I've been really enjoying having some, you know, local Arkansas filmmakers like yourself on the show to just meet more people in the film community and learn about what you're working on. So you are a filmmaker right here in Arkansas. Tell us about yourself and how you got into filmmaking.
It's quite a long journey. I actually didn't have a background in filmmaking. I studied visual arts and worked as a graphic designer ever since the college year started. I worked at a photo studio back home in Indonesia for more than 3 years. It was part-time at first, so sometimes when I went home, I passed by the commercial department and I stopped there to watch, you know, because it's a totally different working environment. Yeah. When you work as a graphic designer, you usually sit there in front of your screen alone. But sometimes there are meetings with clients or supervisor, but that's it. Don't get me wrong though, I also enjoy my solitude when I'm working. I like editing too. But I was just a curious teenager who wanted to experience new things, and I got caught there. The production head was really nice to welcome me in joining them at that time, so I became involved in commercial projects as well. And as we know, commercial nowadays have narrative aspects into it, so I became more and more curious about video production, and I decided to learn from the basic. I came here to UCA 2 years ago, and that's how it all started.
That's great. Yeah, it is such an interesting thing going from, you know, working alone on a computer to like the collaborative sort of team setting of like a film set. That's pretty cool. Well, as a filmmaker, are there any films or other filmmakers that you find inspiring or influential for your own style?
Absolutely. Yeah, there are a lot. And for me, it is different from project to project. For example, I made a short last spring called Treachery. It's part of the anthology project inspired by Dante's Inferno, Ninth Circle of Hell. Like for Treachery, I was mainly inspired by Emma Seligman's tight composition, as in her Siwa Baby. And also Robbie Muller, all handheld camera, as in his movie Breaking the Waves.
And
it's different with my upcoming project, which will have a more subtle and stable movement that is mainly inspired by Claire Maiden, as in her Portrait of Lady of Fire, or Hong Hyun-pyo, as in Parasites. I also refer a lot to Florian Hofmeister and Yasujiro Ozu for the composition and the utilization of spaces. So it's really depends on the project I'm working on.
That's really cool. Well, when you told me in your email that you reached out with about what your film is about, I thought it sounded so interesting. I actually thought about Ozu just because of, you know, parents and family and all of that. Tell us about your new film.
The Chinese title for the film is Fu Ai Ru Shan. And for the English title, it is a literal translation from that, which will be Father's Love is Like a Mountain. If you are wondering why and how does it relate with a mountain, then please watch the movie when it comes out, because we will have some explanation about it and you will understand it whenever you finish the movie. Hopefully, yeah. It's a story about an Asian father-daughter relationship where the daughter feels her father is unsupportive of her passion in art, while in fact, the father has his own way of loving her. The story is inspired by my personal relationship with my dad. I feel father's love in this society is underappreciated. So it's so rare to see teens or early adolescents who have a good relationship with their father, including myself when I was in my teenage year. But after becoming an adult, I realized that most of the conflicts are often caused by lack of communication, and sometimes it's just because we have different love languages. That's why I try to show it to people in this upcoming film. I like my film to inspire people to appreciate everything and everyone in this life, like motivating people to try to understand or connect or probably reconnect with people around us, especially their dad, because at the end of the day, I believe all dad in this world will always give their best for their children, and they deserve some love from us, you know, because they are not growing, getting any younger anymore. And even if there's only one person that choose to reconnect with their father, like after watching my film, I will take it as a success for me.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And I think that's, I love that because I'm always thinking about like, I really do think that film has the power to like change people's minds and change the way people think about things and really heal divisions. And so I absolutely love that. I think that's great. Well, I'm so excited to see it one day. I know you're still in the creation process of that. How can we follow along online or get involved with your film?
All right, so we have a Facebook group called Two Crescents Short Film. We also have an Instagram page. It's also Two Crescents Film, as well as a GoFundMe link that will be posted in the caption, right?
Yes, yeah, I'll put all this in the show notes. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
We really hope to get as much support as we can. Any kind of works, any kind of help works and matter, any amount of donation will be appreciated, as well as you know, spreading this campaign, sharing to people that you know. Oh, anyway, did I tell you about the upcoming raffle for the art presented in the film?
I think I saw something on social about it. Yeah, tell us about it.
Yeah, we will have 5 Chinese art scrolls featured in the film as a series. They are often called the 4 gentlemen. Each of them has their own meanings and symbolization, and we will put a short poem in the art piece. So in Chinese and in English, and it's really simple to join this raffle. Simply follow us on social media and then donate any amount on our crowdfunding page. We will give extra entry for every $5. So, and the raffle drawing will be held in December after the shooting is finished. So this can be a good Christmas gift too.
yeah, that's great. I love it. That's so cool. Yes, I'll definitely share all of that in show notes here and on social media. And is there anything else we need to know before we say bye-bye for now?
Yes, we have a Facebook group. It's called Father's Love is Like a Mountain Short Film. And we got an Instagram page, it's called Love Like a Mountain, as well as a crowdfunding page that will be shared below. Please join us on our Facebook group, follow us on Instagram, give us some donation if you can, and share this campaign with your friends and family, because any amount and any kind of support matters. Last but not least, we will have an art raffle soon on our social media, so please stay tuned on our post and hope to see you there. Oh, I enjoy this podcast more than I expected, so thank you so much, Andrew, for having me here, and I hope you guys enjoy it as well.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for coming on the show, and you know, I know it's for especially for young filmmakers, it's so important to just be able to tell people about your work. So I hope some people take note and will follow along and donate. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing about your film.
All right. Thank you so much, Andrew. It's so nice to talk to you. Have a great day.
Yeah. You too. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thanks so much to Pauline for joining the show today. It was a real pleasure speaking with her. If you are an Arkansas filmmaker with a project to promote, don't hesitate to reach out to me by email or on social media. Links to that are in the show notes. Now let's move on to our feature discussion. Filmmaker Chloe Domont has primarily worked in TV up to this point, directing episodes of shows like Suits, Ballers, Billions, and Star Trek Discovery. Her feature debut, which she both wrote and directed, is called Fair Play, and it released recently online after a short theater run. You can stream it now on Netflix. The film stars Phoebe Denever as Emily. At the start of the film, we see her with her romantic partner Luke, played by Alden Ehrenreich. They seem to be madly in love and completely carefree, and then the camera follows them into work. Turns out they are co-workers in an extremely high-pressure investment firm, and they are not allowed to date. The relationship hits a significant hurdle when their boss is fired and they are both up for a big promotion. Joining me once again is film critic Saxon Whitehead. He's the creator of DrPopcorn.net and a film critic right here in Arkansas. It's always a pleasure talking movies with Saxon, and I'm so glad he's back again. Saxon Whitehead, how's it going?
It's going great. Thank you for having me back.
Absolutely. Well, before we get into Fair Play, have you seen anything else recently that you'd like to highlight?
Yes, I've been watching, you know, quite a bit lately. I've been doing a lot of catching up on some of this year's releases, you know, just kind of trying to fill in some blind spots. And one that I particularly wanted to highlight here was one that came out earlier this year and is streaming now. It's called 1001. It's the debut of A.B. Rockwell, a very powerful movie that I feel like deserves a little bit more attention.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
The story of, you know, it's a mother and, you know, her son and kind of the struggles that they, you know, face. Really, really liked this movie a lot. Really one that impressed me a whole lot. And then also, I just wanted to bring up real quick, now streaming on Hulu, No One Will Save You, which just premiered, I think, about a couple weeks ago as the time of recording this. Very fascinating movie. Definitely a good one to watch for this time of year. You know,
yeah, it's spooky over. Season.
It's a little spooky. It's a little kind of unsettling. Yeah. Caitlin Dever is wonderful in this one as well. Very interesting little movie. Definitely recommend both those. So two very different movies, but two great ones.
I haven't seen that yet either. And I've been seeing so many good reactions to it that definitely want to check it out. I love Caitlin Dever from seeing her in Booksmart originally. And she's just really quite an actress. But then, so as I understand it, there's like not a ton of dialogue, right? It's like largely... I know she's being hunted by something or something like that. I don't even know details, but I've heard it's really, really good.
Yeah, there's very, very little dialogue. It's fascinating.
I love that.
But yeah.
Very nice. Well, I haven't watched a ton of movies besides podcast stuff recently, but I did see, I've been trying to go out to the Studio Ghibli ones when they play in the theater, just because I have so many blind spots there that I'm wanting to remedy. And so I finally saw Howl's Moving Castle. The Ooh. First time. Loved it. You know, it's actually took my son with me, which I wasn't sure, you know, how's the attention span going to be? There was not so long ago, if it wasn't Boss Baby, or Mickey, he like didn't care. But we went and saw this. He did great. He sat still. A few moments of like scenery, he was just like, wow. I was like, yes, and getting him into this. So he really enjoyed it. I would say like whenever I go see a Studio Ghibli movie, I'm often like, wow, is this my new favorite one? Like, this was so good. I didn't quite have that much of a connection with this one, but I did really like it. I thought it was gorgeous. I thought the story was fascinating. And Howl is such an interesting character and just like really unique, I think. Yeah, so I really liked it. But that was one thing I watched recently that was really gorgeous. And then on the TV side, so I mentioned last time my wife doesn't watch a ton of movies. We do watch a lot of TV together, and we usually just watch something funny kind of at the end of the day. So we've been watching back through 30 Rock, and what a funny show that is. We just finished it recently again, and it's kind of a weird moment in TV history too, because it came out, I remember like watching The Office and then Parks and Rec and then 30 Rock. All was like a comedy block, and Community for a while was the fourth one too. So like kind of a little sitcom renaissance at that time. And then I mean, now nothing lasts half as long as, you know, like it had 7 seasons, which is kind of wild. Like if that show came out today, it wouldn't go past 2 or 3 seasons, it seems like. Just the landscape is so different. But what were you gonna say?
I was just gonna kind of agree with you. You know, that is such a, you know, it's very interesting to watch that show now, just because it is such a, you know, such a unique show and such a, you know, such a weird show, you know, like a really wonderfully weird show. Yeah. And you know, I'm with you. You know, it's wild that it lasted 7 seasons, and yeah, you just don't see many things like that nowadays.
Yeah. It definitely feels like a product of its time. There, some of the humor definitely feels a little dated. Like they probably wouldn't try to make this joke now. Some for better and some for worse. I think like some stuff I'm like, yeah, they shouldn't make that joke. Some of it's like, oh, this is edgy. And like, I mean, it's so much that I remember hearing early on, like what they decided, like the comedy dynamic of the show is like, we have this business suit, Jack Donaghy, Alec Baldwin, and then Tracy Jordan, like those two playing off each other. Like there's so much, it just goes and goes. And it really, like that dynamic is really funny. But anyway, big fan of 30 Rock. It holds up for the most part, I think. And that's what we've been watching. But all right, well, let's talk about Fair Play. So this movie stars Phoebe DeNever and Alden Ehrenreich. How familiar were you with either of those actors before seeing this film?
Right. So I was definitely a little bit more familiar with Alden Ehrenreich. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd seen him in a few things before. You know, I think of, you know, obviously Solo being his big, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had, you know, roles in a bunch of other stuff. I just went blank on everything else. Hail Caesar.
Yeah.
I actually recently caught up with Stoker, Park Chan-wook film, and he has like a small role in it. And so I was like, whoa, hey. but, you know, a bunch of other things. So I was very familiar with him, you know, more so than Phoebe DeNever, just because all I've really seen from her was Bridgerton.
I forgot she's in Bridgerton. That's right.
Obviously,
she's like, yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, a very, very different, you know, character, very different style than what we get here. But yeah, I wasn't super familiar with her, but definitely Alden Ehrenreich. I was, you know, I've seen enough of him to kind of be like, okay, I know what I'm kind of getting here.
Yeah. That's so funny. I think I looked at their credits on Letterboxd and it doesn't have TV shows. So I didn't realize she's the Bridgerton person. Of course. Yeah. So I'm just like realizing live right now. But yeah, that also makes sense. You know, Netflix, sometimes it seems like Netflix people show up in Netflix movies and TV shows. But yeah, I thought both of them were really good in this. But yeah, same. I was more familiar with Alden Ehrenreich. First saw him in Hail Caesar. And I mean, the scene, he's so hilarious in that movie. I love him in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And then in Solo as well, and now this. He's an interesting actor because I think he's not just a hunk, you know? Like I was thinking about, I can't remember what movie it was recently where it was like, we needed a male lead, but it's not like it might have been Promising Young Woman or something. I can't remember, but it was like so many male actors had passed on the role because it was like they didn't have enough screen time, where they were like playing second fiddle to the woman character or something. And so like this is that kind of movie where I could see some men passing on this role because it's kind of an intense one. But I'm impressed that he took it on, and because it's kind of about the fragility of masculinity and that sort of thing. But yeah, I thought both of them were really strong in this. I don't think I have any complaints with the performances at all. And both of them have to go to some more extreme lengths without spoiling anything than I initially expected. And yeah, so I was really impressed with both of the leads here.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I think both of them are phenomenal in this movie. Like, you know, I think I was especially taken with Phoebe DeNevers' performance, just because, one, I mean, that's, you know, the lead. Two, the light, like the little shades and little things that we see in this character throughout the movie are just so fascinating, and how, on one hand, in a way, we're kind of supposed to be on her side, but some of her actions throughout the movie are just so troubling.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just kind of like, oh my goodness, like she's, you know, got her own issues. She's just a very complex character. And I think she does a great job of, you know, taking that on. You know, it's not easy to portray these kinds of things on screen, first of all, but also, you know, just having her, you know, just being so, I guess, fearless is the right word. You know, in portraying these darker things, and by taking on a character that is a bit, you know, complex and complicated, I was just very impressed, just, you know, with this being only like the second thing I have seen her in.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, so she's really got something here. And so I really am excited to see her in other things.
Yeah.
And then for Alnernreich, I just think that is such a fascinating character, and like, you know, it's a very, you know, again, it's a challenging role for very different reasons, I think. Well, yes and no, I guess I should say. But there's like a whole other layer to it of him being a man, and him being kind of feeling a little bit more entitled to some of the things that are kind of at stake in this movie, and seeing how he reacts whenever things don't necessarily go his way, or when things kind of subvert what he has kind of come to expect. He has a lot of great moments that I'm sure we'll get into here in a minute. But like these moments where, you know, just seeing how he, you know, kind of, you know, shifts and adjusts whenever things get in the way, he just does these fascinating things, make these fascinating choices. And so many of them are just like, I don't know. We'll get into all of it here in a minute. it's a lot, and I feel like I've just been going on and on. But
no, you're good.
He's phenomenal.
I completely agree. Yeah, I think both so strong. And my next question is like, what do you think are this film's strengths? And so I guess I'll start by saying that I think it's the script. I think the writing. Like, we're gonna talk about any qualms, and I have a few writing qualms, but for the most part, like, the dynamic between them is really well written. I think so much of the, I guess, to talk about what you were just talking about, and we can talk more about the writing in a minute, but I think, you know, as a male viewer watching this, it's an interesting thing because you get the sense, oh, he's like, I want to be a modern man. I want to be supportive of, you know, women in the workplace or whatever. And so there's so many moments where you can tell that he's saying one thing and feeling something else, and that escalates. But like on the smaller scale, like, okay, that's a familiar feeling. Like some of those smaller moments of, you know, whether you're in an argument or whether you feel like, oh, I thought that was going to be my thing or not. But then what the script does well, I think, is like, okay, look where that can lead, you know, if it's unchecked, or look at like, that little toxic feeling that maybe you felt a little bit something like that, that's really toxic. And like, it helps to point that out, I think, for hopefully for male viewers to like, don't be, you know, find a better way to be than this. But I just think Alden Ehrenreich really portrays that well. And the way that this escalates, again, we'll talk about spoilers and get into the ending later, but the way that it escalates gradually enough, but it still feels like realistic enough, you know? To speak to what you were saying, I think the dynamics between them are really well written on both the male and the female side. And obviously the male side is what I know better, but really, really well written, I think.
Right. Yeah. No, I have to second that. You know, the script, I think, is extremely strong, especially for this to be, you know, a debut. Mm-hmm. You know, and I have my own issues with it as well, and we'll get into that in a bit. But my whole thing with the script that I think as well is just some of these, like, just smaller moments and how they really, you know, just kind of tell you pretty much all you really need to know. Like, these little things that you're just like, okay, boom, like, we got this here, we got this, you know. And there's several little moments like this throughout the movie. Probably one of the earliest examples that I noticed, you know, is early on in the movie, Phoebe DeNevers' character, she gets a call to go meet one of her coworkers, and then she ends up meeting with the boss of the hedge fund. And then, you know, basically, you know, without getting into, you know, too many specifics, it's a good conversation. Like, it basically, you know, it's very positive, you know. And so she returns home, and she's mentioning this. She's talking about Alnernreich's character, and his first reaction is, he didn't try anything, did he? Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, okay. Like, that's really fascinating to kind of see.
Straight to the jealousy, and yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, up until that point, like, he seems, you know, pretty, you know, progressive. Like, he seems very much so, like, I'm going to be, you know, kind of, you know, I'm not going to be like the other guys, you know, kind of like that. And so seeing that, you're like, oh. And then as we see throughout the rest of the movie, we kind of see that facade kind of unravel.
It like peels back the layers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's like little moments like that. And then, you know, another one later on that, like, Eddie Marsan.
Yeah. I'm not sure how to pronounce it either, but I was going to mention him as just like a little mini MVP. He's such a good actor in this. Like,
fantastic.
Brings such a menacing energy to it. Anyway, go ahead.
Yes. No, I am, you know, with you 100%. He is phenomenal in this as well. I've always appreciated him as an actor. You know, I think he's really good, especially in a Happy Go Lucky. I don't know if you've seen that one.
It's been on my list forever, but I haven't.
Yeah. Highly recommend. He's fantastic in that movie. But he's awesome in this one too, like, just so menacing. And like, it's not like he's like coming in like doing this big showy, like, you know, like, I'm, you know, it's just so specific and so controlled and so fascinating. But anyway,
there's a thing that, like, I just to harp on that one more second, like, I don't know how certain actors do that, where like they're just emanating like, I'm a powerful person, like, I'm important. And the counterpoint I'm thinking of is Brian Cox in Succession. Like, he's just like, there's a gravity to his presence on the screen that it's because of how everyone else reacts to him, I guess. But like, he has a similar kind of like just energy that is really, really fun to watch. But yeah, go ahead.
Right. But anyway, so the moment though, that I think, you know, and this one's a little bit less subtle, admittedly, but still one that really stuck out to me, is the part where, Eddie Marsan has called Phoebe Denver into his office, and like, they're talking, and he basically calls her a pretty foul name. He says something pretty pejorative, and he doesn't say it like in like an overly, like, you know, again, it's not like an overly like yelly way. It's not like a shouting thing. He just kind of says it very matter of fact, but like still very, you know, just like, you feel the oomph.
Yeah, so cruel. Of it. Yeah.
And you're just like, man, I really don't like this guy. I just really cannot stand it. You know, it's just like little things like that, just these tinier details that, like, for the most part, like, I feel like in other films, we would kind of just see that and just kind of move on. But like, these little moments that just really stick out and just really get into these ideas that Chloe Domont is kind of kicking around here. Mm-hmm. You know, these ideas of misogyny in the workplace, these ideas of power dynamics, you know, and just any kind of relationships, professional or personal.
Yeah.
Just really fascinating stuff. And I think that the writing is just so strong in that regard, that it kind of makes some of the issues I have with the script a little bit disappointing. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to that in a minute. But generally speaking, the script is good. And then I think the performances, especially from Denver, Aaron Reich, and Eddie Marsan.
Yeah.
All good.
Totally agree. And I think one other positive thing about the script, I think, is just like the dynamic it sets up with like when we're in the workplace and when we're not in the workplace and how different that feels. And like just the pressure of that environment in the workplace, like all the workplace scenes, I think I was just so glued to like what's going to happen next. And there's such an energy to that. That is, I think really well done, but Well, yeah, we want to talk? Go ahead.
Oh yeah. No, I was just going to say like that compartmentalization also really stuck out to me. Like just how, you know, like at home, it's like a little bit more, at least near like the beginning, it's a little more relaxed, a little bit more.
That becomes a little more heightened too as it goes on. But yeah.
Right. And like at work, it's just so tense and it's so cold and it's just so, you know, just like, you know, I don't really know how else to describe it other than that. Like it's just very much so just like you just feel all of a sudden just like tightened up almost.
It's like we're in a war zone or something. Like
I think that's a really good way of putting it, actually.
Everyone's like out to get each other at least a little bit.
And just like, as you know, they try to keep these two lives separate essentially over the course of the movie, and as they really struggle with that and how that kind of bleeds into each other, I think is so fascinating. I think that's probably Chloe Dolan-Strieg as a director, I think, in allowing that environment to kind of, you know, really bleed into each other as the movie goes on. I think that's really well done on her part.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Well, do we want to talk about any qualms, any issues with the film that you had?
Yeah. So my biggest issue with this movie is that, like, you know, for the most part, I think it, you know, moves along pretty well. Like I was like there wasn't really anything that I was just like, you know, had any major issues with until about like midway through, whenever things start to get really heightened and things start to get really, you know, even more intense. There's a lot more fighting between Phoebe Denver and Alden Ehrenreich. And I feel like that gets a little repetitive, you know, kind of in this last section. Like there's just a point where I was like, okay, I feel like we've had this fight like three times already. Let's just kind of, let's move a little bit forward now. I feel like if we just maybe cut one of those fight scenes, maybe one of those argument, you know, scenes.
Yeah.
I feel like it would have pretty much accomplished the same things that it ends up accomplishing at the end. But that's probably my biggest issue is that, yeah, that's really my main issue with it. It's just kind of how it just kind of gets in that kind of repetitive, you know, borderline tediousness kind of for a bit. Like there's like these little moments where it kind of, you know, it gets you back up and then we're back down where we were again.
Yeah, that's interesting. I definitely had a feeling, you know, I was thinking about like the movie Marriage Story from a few years ago. It's like, is Netflix just trying to recapture the magic of that? Because there's the huge fight scene with Adam Driver that and Scarlett Johansson. That's like, there's so many memes from, you know, him punching the wall and all of that. It's like we're trying to, maybe that domestic dispute thing is like, there's some money in there, some awards in there or something. Back to. But yeah, I agree. I think I'd have to rewatch it. I never like felt like, oh no, I'm bored or anything, like, but I definitely felt like, yeah, maybe it got just a tad repetitive. And I think probably maybe the reason for that would be like, it builds to something pretty big, and we'll talk about the ending in a minute again with spoilers, but I guess you probably want to feel like you don't rush into that, I guess, as a writer. I've never written a script, so I don't really know, but I think so. If I have any qualms with it, they're mostly actually about the ending, so I can't really be specific about the spoilers yet, but just to be vague about it, I guess there's a few, like, I didn't know that it totally earned a few things that I can be specific about in a minute. But anything else non-spoilery before we go spoilers?
I will say, I mean, I kind of hesitate to mention it just because I know we're going to get into it, spoilers and also, but like the vague version of what we're going to get into here in a second is there's a specific event that happens kind of very close to the end that I don't 100% think was necessary getting to that final point. It's like, it could have been a lot worse. I will say, like, it could have been much worse in how they handle it. I think the movie handles it fairly well for the most part, but at the same time, it's like, do we really need to have this moment?
Yeah.
Is this 100% necessary? Because again, I feel like it kind of accomplish what it sets out to without this moment. I feel like there's a strong chance it could have, at least.
Interesting.
But yeah.
All right. I think I know what you mean. Let's say spoiler warning. If you watch it, it's on Netflix. You can go see it now. So is the scene you're talking about, like the bathroom scene towards the end?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I thought so. So I have thoughts about that scene because my qualm with the ending, specifically like the final scene, is the moment. Okay, we're in spoiler territory. The moment when she like grabs the knife and it's like, that's a big step, like,
yeah.
And I felt, and so I think like the bathroom scene is trying to justify that, and I mean, again, I'm not a woman viewer, so maybe that would color my perception, but it did feel like the leap from the leap to violence, although I mean she's just had violence perpetrated against her, so I don't know, but it felt like pulpy suddenly, where it was like mostly really grounded, and then it's like suddenly we're in like a not campy, but maybe like bordering on like, is this a little silly when she grabs a knife off the floor? Maybe not. I'm sure there's different opinions off on that, but also I kind of saw where it was going because she accidentally drops the knife and I was like, okay, I think I know what's gonna happen here. That said, like the performances of that I thought were really good, and like him breaking down in the end was, I thought, really well done. And like the thing she says to him, I thought again, like the dialogue was written well. I had a similar maybe feeling to you about the bathroom scene, and basically it was just like, as I was in the moment of watching it, I questioned, so like they're fighting, and then he starts coming onto her, and then she like reciprocates at first, right? And then obviously she doesn't after that, and it gets horrible. But I was kind of like, why would she reciprocate that at all? That seems like it's just trying to go for like a sexy mad fight kind of a thing. But then in reflection, I was like, she probably was doing that for her own safety. Like she thought, like, he literally might harm me if I don't go along with him in this moment. So there's that. But like that was a moment that I was like questioning a bit. But then I think I, you know, talked myself out of having any issues with it. But yeah, I think I see what you mean about like, was the bathroom scene necessary? It was definitely really intense, and I think like handled pretty well as far as I feel like, but yeah, could it have been cut? Possibly. I'll say the moments when it really starts to like go in there is when he shows up in the office being crazy. And like that scene is, I think, really good too. I was like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. And then like when they're fighting at the restaurant leading up to that, again, I think that's pretty strong. And like, I feel like it ramps up appropriately, I think. But yeah, I think people are gonna have different opinions about it. I do feel like you can feel a tension almost of like, do we go even bigger or do we go smaller? And like where at the ending it goes like pretty big, but I've seen some people say, oh, we wish it would have gone even further and like been totally crazy at the end and like become a slasher movie. So yeah, I'm sure there's different opinions about it.
Yeah, I mean, like I think I do honestly see what you mean with all that. And like, I definitely think that like in terms of like justification and stuff like that, like for like that ending scene, mm-hmm. I can see why they decide to go that route. Mm-hmm. I just kind of, I think, was just really surprised that it went as far as it does in that way. Mm-hmm. Because like, and I'm kind of surprised that people are saying they wish they would have gone bigger.
Yeah. I've just seen a couple of tweets. I don't know. But yeah, go ahead.
I just don't, I just have a hard time seeing how anyone could think that, just because like that just doesn't seem like this kind of what this movie is. Like, mm-hmm. it's already going a bit bigger than what we've gotten to before now, because like the movie is a bit, you know, understated in certain ways. It kind of tiptoes towards that, you know, melodrama, and that definitely gets very pulpy.
Yeah.
You know, it's in like the back half of it and stuff. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, I don't think it needs to go any bigger than it does. I think like that last moment hits on such like a whoa, you know, which is a very, you know, strong way to end that movie.
Yeah.
You know, even if, you know, maybe certain like logistical, you know, things don't quite add up, I think that the ending honestly worked for me fairly well. And it's mainly because of the acting between them. I mean, I think that they're just both so incredible that it kind of maybe covered up a little bit of the finer points, you know, those kind of issues in there.
Yeah. You know what I'm thinking about too now is, so I think in part of my mind, I was thinking like, would this have been like more powerful if he wasn't at knife point? Like if she had somehow been able to like break him down verbally or something without, you know, the threat of violence. But I think maybe that's internalized misogyny. I don't know. Cause I'm thinking about, did you see the film God's Country last year?
I did not know.
It's not a lot of people did. I'd highly recommend it. But it's Tante Way Newton and it's like a neo-Western. But it ends with something in a similar way that is like, okay, if we had just seen John Wayne do that, we would have no moral qualms with it. But because it's Tante Way Newton, we're like, oh, maybe she shouldn't have done that. And so I think the movie is calling that into question intentionally. And I love that about it. So maybe that's exactly what's happening here. Like if the roles were reversed, I don't know, it's a different situation. So I don't know if that's not an exact parallel, but maybe I'm, you know, because it's the woman with the knife that I'm like, because he's obviously, again, he's just been violent to her in the last previous scene. But it's also interesting that he's like, he doesn't even think what happened in the bathroom was that bad. And she has to like point out to him that it was. It just like the level of denial. But I will say, since we're in spoiler territory, one thing I really liked, like one of my favorite things about the writing was the scene where she is talking to Eddie Marsan about, and like her, how she's spinning it in her favor, like politically in the company. Like it was such a moment. Like I took like creative writing classes in college. And so like one of the things you try to do is do something that's surprising and yet feels perfectly natural to the characters. So it's like, oh my gosh, but of course that would happen. Like, and I feel like it totally nailed that, because it's such a like a damn, she did what kind of a scene, but it's like, of course you do that. And it's like the most logical thing. And it's like, in a way, it's brilliant. I just think that's really, really good writing in that scene. But,
oh yeah, I agree with you 100%. Like whenever it, like that cut from the bathroom to her talking to Eddie Marsan, I was just very, you know, just like it kind of was a moment where I was just like, what? And was just like kind of like very fascinating. The more I sat with the process, I'm like, that's really good writing on her part, on Chloe Domont's part. Just a very great way of putting it, and kind of like based on what we end up seeing in the later part of the movie, it just kind of adds more to that weird, you know, kind of, you know, there's a lot of, I think, questions that I think it's just going to differ from person to person on how much of what we have just seen is justified, how much of it is not.
And I like that the movie is like sparking that conversation on purpose. I think that's a strength of it, but
Oh yeah, 100%. But yeah, I don't know. I just think in like the last moment, I feel like it really gets to the heart of what's going on. And I don't know if, you know, necessarily the way we got there is the way we should have gotten there. You know, I think that there's definitely some issues I have kind of with some things along the way. But I think that last moment, that last shot specifically.
Yeah.
You know, just so simply effective, where basically we see, you know, Phoebe Denver, and how the camera is like just angled up just enough to kind of, you know, give you that impression of power. You know, we finally kind of see her there. You know, I mean, I'd have to go back and watch it to see, but like that, I think, is like the one time in the movie where we see her at that kind of angle.
Yeah.
And it kind of mirrors this other similar angle, the similar shot. So there's a scene we haven't discussed yet where Ulm Ehrenreich has just found out that there's a new position open, like later in the movie, where it's basically like he would be on the level of Phoebe Denver's character. And so he just bursts into Eddie Marsan's office and gives this big impassioned speech about why he should choose him. Only for that to be completely undercut by him revealing that they had just hired someone.
Great.
Which is both very funny and so heartbreaking because like you just see like all of it's to kind of tie it to The Simpsons, you know, kind of weird thing to compare it to. There's the episode with Ralph where he loves Lisa and it's like you can see the very moment his heart breaks. And so you have that moment with Ulm Ehrenreich where like you see the moment his heart breaks. Where it's just like, oh man. And like we see this like we see that and then we just cut back to Eddie Marsan and we got that angle up again. And he just gives this like one sly like little like kind of like almost smirk where you're just like, oh man, this is one cold-blooded guy. And I feel like we get a similar moment to that at the end with Phoebe Denver. And maybe it's because, you know, she's a woman. Maybe it's because of the circumstances. It's a little bit different. We don't necessarily think, man, she's a cold-blooded, you know, person. We just kind of think, man, did she have to do that?
Or like for the first time she has the upper hand in the entire movie, maybe. Wow. Really interesting. And I think what I like about it too, like the whole film is like, it's very much a feminist film, but it's not just like woman good, man bad. It's like, it's much more complex than that. And I think brings dimension and like reality to what is, a very heightened situation and like very cinematic and played up and all that, but it still feels real and grounded. Like 99% of the movie, I think, feels like realistic. So anyway.
And that's what I honestly really liked about it, because I think it'd be really easy for it to kind of be in that, being like a much more heightened, very, you know, very more so cut and dry type of, you know, type of way of storytelling, I guess. But I think the fact that it is more realistic and it is more grounded and covers those complexities that we see in our, like in just our regular lives, makes it all the more impactful. It makes it all the more effective as well, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. As you said earlier, incredibly impressive for a debut and such a filmmaker to watch. Absolutely. Cool. Anything else you want to say about Fair Play before we wrap up?
I think we kind of covered just about everything that I really wanted to focus on. I just really think that this is one that surprised me. I went into this one pretty blind. But I was just really blown away by just how strong the writing was and just how strong the performances were. Easily some of my favorite performances of the whole year, in my opinion. Just excellent stuff.
Definitely one I want to check out again. And by year's end for those performances for sure. And I think like, as you said, like I went pretty blind as well and I was like, oh, it's like a steamy erotic thriller. And like, it's sort of kind of that, but like it's real sexy at the beginning and then it, not anymore after that. Like, so it kind of pulls the rug under you from under you for that kind of thing as well, which I enjoyed about it as well. But yeah, Fair Play, now streaming on Netflix. Highly recommend checking it out. And obviously, hopefully, if you're listening to these spoilers, you already have seen it. But thanks again, Saxon, for joining us. And remind us where we can find you online, drpopcorn.net, and where else?
Yeah, so drpopcorn.net, that's where I, you know, post reviews on new releases. You can also find me on the site formerly known as Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. I call it Twitter still. You can find me at Saxon Whitehead on there. And you can find me on Letterboxd. Just search my name and I'll be there.
I will link all that in the show notes. Give Saxon a follow. Thank you again so much. This was great. I really appreciate your time and we will talk to you next time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Once again, I just loved talking with Saxon. It's always a great discussion when he's around. Pay attention to your podcast app. Some big award contenders are coming, like Saltburn, I'm excited to see. Poor Things looks great. Rustin, very excited for The Boy and the Heron. All films I would love to discuss on here. Still planning, but stay tuned. And with that, thank you so much for listening to Arthouse Garage. We have a few years worth of episodes now. You can hear all of them in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Arthouse Garage, become a patron over at patreon.com/arthousegarage or find a link in the show notes. You can also buy an Arthouse Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. If you want to support us without spending any money, leave a rating or review in your podcast app. And that is really helpful. Stay in the loop about Arthouse Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter. You can also email me directly anytime, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Arthouse Garage in all those places or find links in the show notes. That will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, keep it snob free.